Hi folks, Jean here, and welcome to another episode of Have You Ever Read? This month, we're taking a different direction with two firsts for the podcast. If you've been a regular listener, you'll have noticed that most of the books, if not all of the books, we've spoken about have been very theology heavy or instructional in nature. But today we're changing it up a bit, and we're going to speak about an autobiography. Also, you would have heard in the trailer that this podcast is not just about reading different books from the global church, but it's also about hearing different voices from within the church. This month, I'm happy to announce that I'm speaking to our first Asian guest. My friend and I, Kin, sit down to discuss Corrie Ten Boom's thought-provoking autobiography, The Hiding Place. Before we dive into the book, Kin offers her perspective on coming to faith in Malaysia and how Christians outside of Malaysia might pray for the Malaysian church. I'll leave it there for now so that you can enjoy Have You Ever Read The Hiding Place by Corrie Ten Boom with my friend Kin. Hi Kin, thanks so much for joining us on this month's episode of Have You Ever Read. So before we dive into your book, do you want to just introduce yourself to the listeners and explain how you and I know each other?
Yeah, sounds good. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here. This is also my first podcast. We were introduced because I used to work at Amazon, and while Amazon UK in London, and while I was there, I really sought the Christian community and didn't find one. And so I just started one. And at the same time, God was raising Christian communities in Amazon around the world. And there was the global head one in Seattle also raising at the same time. We did not know about each other. And then one day, I think we somehow found out that we both exist and we connected. And there's a wonderful lady in Seattle named Mimi Chan, a prayer warrior by every means. And she's wonderful. And Mimi said, do you know about these people that are doing a Christian conference in the MBA in Oxford, which is, you know, both our alma mater? And so I thought, oh my gosh, that's wonderful. And she connected us. And it's just been wonderful to meet somebody who is so passionate for faith and work and really started something in Oxford there too.
Yeah, it made me see how small the world is. Because when Mimi introduced us, I was like, oh, wow. Because I think someone else had also told me that you existed. There was another MBA who was before us and was interested in the faith and workspace, was a serious Christian. We should connect. Oh, it was Brian at Believers in Business. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So another mutual contact. This one was from New York. It was really weird. So and it's just interesting to me how God kind of makes these connections. Now that you've introduced yourself, do you want to tell us a little bit about the book that you've chosen and why?
So the hiding place actually is written by Corrie Ten Boom, who is a survivor of the concentration camps. She was in Netherlands. And what's different about this, well, what's different about the story is that first, you know, I think a lot of people think of concentration camps there as, you know, just Jewish people. Mm-hmm. But actually, there were a lot of people who tried to save Jewish people who were political protesters and people who were, you know, sheltering them that also got sent to these concentration camps. And the other thing about it is that she and her father, they ran a business that were clock repair. And they led a very simple life, but the wonderful thing about them, I think, is just that, as you know, we talked before, that you know, their faith was also just very simple. It was just doing the next right thing that they knew how, that they just kept on going back to God and saying, all right, well, I don't know, but you do. And through that unveils this huge story where God is so clear throughout her life, and she just sort of walks it, and it's just demonstrated. I think people also know Corrie Ten Boom to be someone who talks a lot about forgiveness. And this, it happens very, very late in the book, what you see, because of all the things that she went through. But that perfect forgiveness, because, you know, for having gone through what she's seen, to be able to forgive the people that was responsible for her sister's death and all that, like, it was massive. So I think that's another thing that is something, you know, forgiveness, I think a lot of Christians, like, struggle with. Yeah. And to have this example through her that, and it's not something where, you know, we pray really hard, we act or all these things. It just Jesus has that sort of faith, and God demonstrates it
Yeah.
through our experiences.
Cool. I mean, we'll unpack the book a bit more, but as regular listeners of the podcast know, what we're trying to do in this podcast, apart from talk about great books, is we're also trying to get different perspectives about the global church. And I guess I approached you. One of the reasons why I approached you is you're from Asia, and I've not had any Asian guests on the show. So could you tell us a little bit about your background in terms of faith background and how you came to know Christ?
Yeah, so born in Malaysia, I spent some of my childhood growing up in a neighborhood church, still a really sweet community neighborhood church. And when it first started, it was like 30 people, a few families. It's a brethren church. And my family, my mother was our sort of pillar of faith in our family, and brought the rest of the father and would take the kids to Sunday school and all of that. So I got to know Christ because of my parents. But I had to go through a journey to choose him for myself. So being brought up in this church, and of course, I left to go to Canada, came back just through circumstances and my parents' jobs. I grew up in different countries. But every time we come back to Malaysia, we would still attend this community church. And so in my teenage years, I was here back in Malaysia and did things like youth fellowship. I did Sunday school, and I was always that kid that was like super active. Like if there was snacks, and I would be like the one being involved in like serving, and I wanted to, I don't know, lead and just do organizational things. I was part of the board for youth fellowship. And I think during that time, I think I thought that like being more involved meant you were more Christian. And you just kind of believe that because you're young and you're teenage in your faith. You think like the action is the faith. And until I then left to Taiwan for my high school years, and I think it was there that I was really challenged through another sort of church that I went through. And I won't say much about that church, but essentially it really challenged my belief about Christians. It wasn't a good experience, I'll say that. And it started me thinking like, Lord, if this is what you call Christian, then I don't want to be a Christian. And I don't want to call myself that. So I actually left the faith for a couple of years, risked going on my own journey and thinking like, okay, God, like, I don't know what this is about. But, and I was angry at him, and I railed at him, and whatever. But the irony about all of that is that while I was telling him that I don't believe in him, I was talking to him. And I did not understand that irony, as a teenager. But it got to a point where life was, I had run away from him, and I had fights with my family, all of these things that were happening, and I was off experimenting as a teenager and all that. And I realized the fundamental truth at the very end of it is that like life with God and as a Christian isn't perfect, isn't always a walk in the park. But life with him is infinitely more, is infinitely worse and infinitely more hopeless. And it was a lonely path. And then one day I ventured into a Bible study through a group of friends, and I heard God call back, and I just melted and broke down.
Was
But then
that
I
in,
thought that
sorry,
was just
was that in Taiwan?
in Taiwan. Yeah. So it's like almost graduating. I got into some Bible study and I just cried. And then I thought, oh, maybe this is just a fluke, I'm just whatever. And so the next time I got invited to the Bible study, and somehow I was like, okay, I'll go. Then I went again, and it happened again. And it just was like a slow calling back. And I came to a point where I ended up choosing God for myself. And that's when I knew the difference between choosing God for myself and just, accepting the God of my parents. And it was the greatest gift God ever gave me, because from then on, I never confused, and I'm sorry to say this, but I never confused God and the church and the actions of the church and
Oh,
God.
different.
Like I never saw the actions of Christians as the reflection of our God. It's an unfortunate thing to say, but I never confused them, so that I would always know like our God is perfect and perfect love and all of that. And no matter how much you get hurt by churches or Christians, it doesn't touch what I know about God and the greatest gift he gave me.
No, that's a real revelation, and I think it's relevant. It's a one of the major struggles, I think, at least in the Western church, that, and even to some extent, I've heard in African, I know of in the African church, where people have been wounded by the church and they've given up their faith because of that. But You're right, that is critical and key that we're able to identify the difference between the God that we're serving and the people who are trying to serve on his behalf. We're all imperfect, but sometimes that message gets lost. Probably because of also how we present ourselves. We sometimes present ourselves as perfect, but we're not perfect representations of Christ. So yeah, that's a good revelation. But I wanted to just ask you a bit, because so for the podcast, most of our listeners are from West, like USA, UK. We do have a few, we have listeners around the world, but the majority are from like the Western, right? So most of us don't have much experience of Christianity or the faith in Asia. So when you said that your parents brought you up in church, for me, I was even a bit shocked, like, oh, so it's normal, right? So can you just maybe tell us a little bit about Christianity more broadly? I mean, I'm not saying that you're a specialist or anything, but like, just because you've lived abroad as well. So if you could give us some insight into Christianity in that side of the world for those of us who have no exposure to it whatsoever.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I can also talk a little bit more specifically about Christianity in this specific part of Asia, which is like Southeast Asia and Malaysia in particular. So I think probably one of the most relevant things I can say to a Western audience is the privilege of a total expression of your faith and to just this assumption that people understand the Christian identity or Christian value. Because here in Malaysia, for example, it's just a very unique situation where faith comes down racial lines as well. And so 65% of the Malaysian population is Malay and Muslim. And the rest are in like mostly Indian and of Ch Indian and Chinese descent, and then lots of other like native and other migration. And for those who are not Muslim, you have the freedom to choose whatever. But among that, there's Hinduism, Buddhism, Christianity, there's what we call free thinkers and all that. So even among those who are Christian, sorry, have the freedom to choose, a small percentage of that is Christian. On one hand, it creates for a tapestry of like amazing cultural integration and an inclusion that is very interestingly and differently practiced here than I would see in a Western context, like in the UK or in the US. For me, it's very much a part of life to, have the inclusion of different religions and everything, and we celebrate it even. But also, you don't have the assumption of a lot of the underlying values that I think in the UK, for example, or in the US, like they've been sort of woven into even history and politics and law and all of that in there. And people don't necessarily use Christianity as an identity, as I would see in the UK and the US, where people just sort of think of their faith as like a inheritance from their family. Here is very much like you need to make a choice because it's not an assumption and it's not really an identity. You not very, I think a small percentage of people choose, to be Christian, and then you actively go and practice it because it's a choice you make. It's not, my family is Christian and all of that. We don't have as long of an inheritance, I think, of that either. I think that's
Interesting. So for those of us that are not in Malaysia, what do you think, how do you think that we could help support the church there? Or I mean, obviously there's prayer, but is there anything specific prayer-wise that we could be praying for, or any other ways that we can maybe support the church there? Again, not thinking that you're a specialist, but like just from your general exposure, knowledge.
Wow, that is a really amazing question. Something I probably should be thinking about a lot more. I think be open in our faith, especially with other races, because it does tend to come down racial lines here. For Christians, I think I'm not sure whether we would call it like the courage to sort of be more expressive of our faith.
So
It's
like boldness, a boldness. These are good prayer topics. Definitely we can take them on board. So, I mean, that kind of leads us nicely on to the book, right? Because boldness is a key theme, I would say. I mean, it's just stepping back so our audience has a bit of an understanding. So this book is a bit different from the books that we've had on the podcast before. Usually our books are more non-fiction like theology heavy sort of step by step, but this is a biography, so it's a different type of book altogether. But as you introduced, it's basically the story of this family who's based in the Netherlands, and it starts before the war begins, and then it goes through how Holland or the Netherlands changes over time as Germany occupies it. And then basically we get the story from the lens of this family. So you mentioned a number of reasons why you chose the book, but what would you say would be your major takeaway, and how did that has that affected your life?
It's hard for me to actually choose like one lesson from the book. I think the overarching theme of the book is trust, and that praise and joy are choices and not something that comes out of the circumstance, but that you in all times and all circumstances can trust and praise. But I find that it just in the story of her life, there are so many small situations that I go back to that help me reflect on my situation. So, and I find sometimes when I run into them in life, I will just remember this one or two lines from the book, and it helps me reframe my faith and see it from, you know, I think how God would want me to see it.
Yeah.
Should I give an example?
Yeah, go for it. Go for it.
So there's one situation where they are in the concentration camp, and they're like in this room crammed with women and all these, they were in mattresses, like covered in fleas. And terrible. And her sister, Betsy, she was saying, well, God gives us the answer into these horrible situations, which is to praise in all circumstances. So she was thanking God for the crowding, the mattresses, all that. And then she says, I don't need to thank God for the fleas.
Yeah.
And Corey goes, are you crazy? And that would be me, right?
Yeah, that would be all of us. Like, I mean, definitely. Yeah.
I mean, if it was me, I'd be like, oh, God, I can't believe you're doing this to us, you know? But I think it was, I'm not sure how long after they realized, and they didn't know why they were thanking God for the sleeves. They just said, just do it. And so Corey said, okay. And she just gritted her teeth and did it. And then several months, or I think maybe years later, it came to pass that Betsy heard a guard, and they were able to hold these like Bible studies and read Bible and minister to the women in this room. And the guards never bothered them in this room particularly. And that became like the saving grace for all of these women to just know that after a hard, difficult day, and it's, you know, horrible circumstances, that they can come together, and that word became life-giving to them. But the guards never came in.
Yeah.
And Betsy overheard a guard say, are you kidding? Like, I'm never going in there, all the fleas. And Betsy goes, that's why. And I realized a thing about that situation, that one, yes, there was a purpose. I mean, not that God sent fleas, but like it was used.
Yeah.
But two, that God was so compassionate enough to also give Betsy the answer, because sometimes you don't get to hear, you don't understand why, but she got to overhear that conversation.
Yeah.
And that's like, oh, this is why. And so one thing I sometimes do is when I'm in a situation where I just want to complain and I'm like, why? Like, terrible timing. Why are you doing this?
Yeah.
All the time. When I hear myself go through that narrative in my head, I buckle down and I say, thank God for the fleas. So I'll just be like, okay. So I just, for whatever reason, and I can't understand it, I just say, thank you, God, for the thing that I really don't want to thank you for. And I feel like just by the nature of doing that, he changes my perspective. Mm. And he immediately starts to show me like all the good things I'm missing. And it happened recently where I had like, and this is a small example, but I had a little mouth infestation, you know, and in a time when I was really already busy, and I was like, even though I'm gritting my teeth, and then I realized instantly, well, I'm so glad I found it, because if I didn't find it, it would have been worse. But now I get to deal with it early. I get to find out about it. And I was in the process of renting the flat out, and I was like, imagine if I had rented the flat out and we found out. So then I feel like just those, every single moment I would just say, thank God for the fleas.
It's so true. And I'm glad you brought up Betsy. I think for me, I'm sorry, I don't know why I asked you about your major takeaway, because I have like about 5 to 6 different things that I want to talk about in this book. But I think the Betsy piece was amazing for me because, you know, the book is written by Corey Ten Boom, but the reality is it's partly because she was the survivor and that Betsy died in the concentration camp. That's her older sister, and also her father did. But both Betsy and her father, they really taught me a lot about Christianity. I mean, I think the dad, firstly, the way they valued the Bible, that was a huge takeaway for me. Like every day from the beginning of the book, the dad, before the German occupation, or I should say the Nazi occupation, the father taught the children, the family, every day they were reading the Bible. And it was twice a day. They would come together in the morning, 8 o'clock before work starts. They read a chapter from the Bible. In the evening, they read a chapter from the Bible. And what was really significant is this was something that they took with them when they went to the concentration camps. So when they were arrested, their main thing was, how can we smuggle in a Bible? And it was the Bible that kept them going throughout the whole thing. Like, they really valued it. Like, they actually needed to read the Bible every day. So I do my quiet time, but I realized as I was reading it that my value, it's not comparable to the way they value it. It was totally different. So even as you brought up the giving thanks piece, it was part of their daily reading that they had read First Thessalonians that day. And Betsy was like, we've read this. God has given us this answer already. This is how we survive this place, by giving thanks in everything that we do. And that really just changed my perspective about how I should value the Bible and how much I should engage with it. It was just, I don't know. That was a lot for me, definitely.
So humbling. Like, I think one of the, to that point, right, when they first got in, and of course they have nothing.
Yeah.
You know, they're crammed in. You could have asked for food or so. And there's this really nice nurse who was trying to get them something. And, you know, I think in that situation, we'd be thinking about our own personal comfort. Food, medicine, vitamins, anything. Because she had left without that luggage that she had packed, right? And instead, the first thing they asked was, get me a Bible.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, Lord, like, incredible. You know, just, I don't know. And that's an amazing faith. And I thought, what a humbling thing, because my first thought would be like, anything to do with comfort, vitamins, health, anything. And she was sick during that time too. But it also kind of teaches you as well that they recognize the importance of their spiritual health, like their spiritual being or strength, because, you know, the soap can run out, the medicine can run out, the food can run out, but what's going to really get you through this time? Your grit, your, you know, just your dependence on something bigger than yourself.
And not only did they ask for the Bible for themselves, they also wanted everybody else around them to have the Bible. So it was this kind of phenomenal thing of, we're in destitute, we're in pain, but actually we need to help as many people as possible. And that's one of the things that Corey kept saying, that Betsy, her older sister, kept turning these things around into, how can more people be saved? And Corey, we're becoming more like Jesus. So I think there was a time when Betsy was whipped because she was too sick to do some of the manual work. And Corey was about to respond and attack the guard. And then her sister said, no, look unto Jesus. If you look, don't look at the whip that I've been whipped by, but look unto Jesus. And she was kind of making the comparison that, look, we have a stripe. We've been whipped like he was. Or when they were naked and they were made to walk through the shower. I remember she said, one of them said to the other, they took away his clothes as well. And it was always that actual mindfulness of Christ, like the actual, let's fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and the finisher of our faith. You get that theme throughout. And I think it's something that their dad instilled in them from birth. And that was a huge takeaway for me.
There was a part, I think, early on when Corey had a terrible dream and she foresaw all of this. And she told Betsy. And instead of feeling anxious, it actually brought some peace and calmness. And Betsy said something that, again, I also go back to, which is, it is enough for me that God already knew, which means that he's already prepared. That's it. It's enough for me that God knew. And, you know, I think it speaks to me in times of uncertainty or anxiety, which, of course, is nowhere compared to the popular going through the conversation
Yeah, I
then.
mean,
So just know, like, it's enough for me that God knew, like, I would be in this situation. And God does, of course he knew, you know.
And
So
and to add to that, it's almost like because he knows, it's always going to be it's going to be all right. No matter what the end is, it's going to be all right.
And also to your point about the German slipping and all that, one of the things that I always thought, and I'm most certainly not there yet, but Pepsi always had this thing that said, like, I feel bad for them. Like, instead of hating them, be like, I feel bad for them. And she feels bad, but in different parts of the book, you know, it kind of reveals that she feels bad because they're like, clearly they've been deceived. Or clearly, like, if they have been deceived enough to do this, like, I feel bad because God's wrath and God's punishment will come down on those who will hurt his innocence, you know, like, and his chosen people. Like, it's always just like, I feel bad. I'm gonna pray for them. And it's just this practice of like praying for your enemies, and I'm like, oh my gosh.
No, you're right. I mean, I think even Corey said it at a point, because just to step it back, in terms of the whole why they were arrested was they had this basic clear part of the underground network that was looking after Jews in the Netherlands. So and Corey was the main the basically the ringleader for their house. And one of the things that she noticed, Corey noticed when she spent time with Betsy in the prison, was actually Betsy was different from her. She had this viewpoint that was more like Christ than Corey could understand, that had understood before. So you're right, she was always, it's almost like she saw the people who were her enemies in the way that God did, as in they were just unsaved and they just needed salvation. And actually, if they had heard the gospel and someone showed them love, they would understand. And you're right, it's like a different perspective about how to see people. The book has a lot of undercurrents and themes that, although it's not like point one, this is what you do, point two, this is what you do, just reading and hearing the story, reading the story, sorry, I mean, it brings out a lot, I
Yeah,
think.
exactly. It's not like an active, like, they pointed out the lessons, like, just going through and seeing, you know, what they went through, you pick out the lessons and you reflected a lot on your life.
I think going on to my next, I was going to ask you about what challenged you, but you've kind of brought it up that, well, for me, I think, I'm sorry, saying it before you say it, but I think as I was reading it, I kept saying, like, help me, Lord, forgive me of my sins. Like, that was my response every time I was reading it, because I was so challenged by the fact that literally I knew that if I was in this circumstance, this would not be my response. Like, in any way, shape, or form. And so that was a major challenge for me. I don't know if you had any, or what was your challenge, or anything you found difficult whilst reading the book.
So a lot of the book, I would say like a good like 85% of it, you know, is about the like challenge to trust. And then the last part after all the stuff that you've gone through tells you about the forgiveness, the perfect forgiveness that God gives you. And I think both those things were very difficult for me. So the first part about trusting in the context of the book, there's another thing, another nugget that I love to go back to, which is the part where her father explains about that sometimes, you know, God doesn't tell you everything because that piece of knowledge is too heavy for you. And it's connected to a little bit further down the line, about where he explains that in the moment that you need it, God will give you the strength to go through it. So when we think about like placing ourselves in these situations. Yes, probably if I had to project myself, I would know who I am today and I wouldn't be able to do any of that, right? And the thing is that I think a lot of people ideally think that if I were during that time, I would definitely save them. That, you know, I want to think that I'm the good person. But chances are you would be so terrified and, you know, whatever, that you would justify, like, no, God would want me to follow what the government would want me to do. You know, you would find ways to justify and not, you know, do the brave thing. But at the same time, if you were truly in that situation, the truth is that God also has sufficient strength and grace for you to give you what you need. So I go back to this in my life often when I think about in our daily walk, in our lives, we go through a lot of circumstances where we think about uncertainty, uncertainty in choosing the next job or spouse or being a good, whatever it is that we choose next. Uncertainty and or times of like suffering or loss, things like that. And I always tell myself, but let God carry it. Mm-hmm. If I don't know why yet, it's just because I need to trust God to carry it for me until I'm ready. And there's another thing that a friend of mine, the one who actually recommended this book, will always say to me when I spiral into my own thoughts and all that. She just says, you get your ticket at the train station. So if you don't know why yet, because you're not at the train station, you don't need to know yet. So every time I sort of find myself in that situation, I tell myself, you get your ticket at the train station.
Yeah. No, it's a great, and I think that's a recurring theme throughout the book, especially at the beginning when they first joined the underground network. A lot of the time they find themselves in situations when the Gestapo is about to get them and they don't know what to do. And what you get throughout is like Corey literally doesn't know what to say. She'll say a quick prayer, not even verbally, just in her mind. And then there the answer comes. So yeah, I again, that's another one of my major takeaways. And it's even, what was interesting was even when they got things wrong, God still showed up. So I don't even know I can say this was wrong. There was one instance when their sister, they have another sister called Nolly. She had Jews in her house and the Gestapo turned up at the house and they asked her, is this person a Jew? And because she can't lie, because that's her upbringing that we're not supposed to lie, she said, yes, this woman is a Jew. So the woman was arrested and taken away. But thankfully, a few weeks later, for some strange reason, I can't remember, I think it was an insignificant reason, the woman was set free. So because obviously Nolly felt really guilty that she had led this woman to her death, but even when Nolly did something that she actually did it because of her Christian values and it looked like it was a disaster, God still came through. So, yeah.
Yeah. That situation you talk about right there is actually one of the hardest that I looked at, because it's a situation where, you think like you can justify white lies, right?
Yeah.
And this situation, you're saving someone's life.
Yeah.
And I think, I think even if I were her and I said no and I lied, I mean, I think I would be pretty confident that God would forgive me in that situation. But also it challenges you to say, like, if I abide strictly by God's law, do I trust him enough to, carry out his will? And even if you were to say, like, something has happened because of her, do you have the arrogance to think that it's because of you that his will didn't come true, So I actually struggle with that situation a lot, because I actually wonder to myself, like, was that right?
Yeah.
I
didn't know. And even when Corey's narrating that story, she's like, why would you do that? Like, I mean, honestly, God would understand. So it's an interesting scenario, which teaches us, I think it reminds us that we all see through a glass darkly, as the scriptures say. So I guess you can only, and that also God looks at our heart. So we can only do what we believe is right at that time, based on, I guess, what the Holy Spirit's leading is at that any one time, and believe God that he'll work out the rest. Because, I mean, as you said earlier, there is an argument that really the government were saying that Jews should be arrested, and therefore should they have even tried to should they have been concealing or lying to the government at the time? Well, yeah, if you loosely call them government, but I think you get my point, right?
It actually addresses that situation, I think, earlier on, and suddenly in the middle of the story, where he had an old employee who came back and wanted to kind of show him up, and they said something like, what does your Bible say about the government? You shouldn't be doing that. And he couldn't prove at the time that, he was, but saying, or what does the Bible say about it, And I can't remember the exact quote, but it's essentially, what Jesus said, which is to give to God what is his and give to the king what is his, in a rephrase of that, which is, you know, to also honor your gods and also honor your, and in this situation he said it's a queen. But it
it's not the Nazi government.
Right. So he, I mean, it does bring up those issues of like, it can be gray, it can be difficult. And so the best, the only thing you can do is to, you know, keep on giving it back to God and saying like, okay, well, I'm just going to take the best step I know.
and move on. Move, walk with him, as it were. And I think that kind of ties into something that we spoke about before the recording about the will of God. And I think one of the things I took away, and I was saying it to you earlier, is that the way our modern Christianity is, we're always looking for this specific, what is the will of God for my life? What do I need to do? How do I know I'm doing the right thing? How do I know this is who I'm supposed to marry? But one of the things that I took away from this book is actually, you just have to do what's in front of you. And that's all they did. They literally just took the next step. Even after when the war ended and Corey and Betsy had a vision that they were going to have a concentration camp, turn a concentration camp into a place of redemption where Germans who had significant roles in the war were going to be, I don't know, rehabilitated. Also had a house for people who had been victims of the concentration camps and how to, and helping them into their rehabilitation back into society. And both of those visions came whilst they were in prison, in the concentration camp. And when Corey came out, she didn't actually have a plan to do that. She had heard that God was going to give this to her. But what she literally did was she just spoke about her story at Bible study, Bible group. And then someone came to her and said, I like this idea. God has told me to help you with this house. And then she got a house. And then in Germany, people wanted to hear more about the story about forgiveness. So when she went to Germany and she was talking to churches, someone said to her, oh, there's this derelict concentration camp. Do you want to use it for your other plan or other vision? So what I learned is, really and truly, you may have a vision, you may have an aspiration or a dream, but it's all about just taking that next step. A lot of the time we get, what's the word, tied down by, I have this overarching vision, I have overarching dream, when is God going to deliver it? And we get distracted by that concept of the will of God rather than actually just living in what God is doing and walking and then seeing his will come to pass.
I struggle a lot with this dichotomy because on one hand we see amazing stories like Corey, and you know, we also know that our God can use the humblest people, right? Fishermen, illiterate people, whatever, and he can use them for whatever purpose. And that, and also when we look at the Bible too, I think there's a on one hand there's God looking at their heart and knowing, you know, who they will become and who they are open to become, but also already having had a plan for these people. And for every single person, there's a plan, there's a purpose, there's whatever. So when I look at Corey, it helps me remember that, you know, she is a daughter of a clock repair person, and she has changed a lot of people's lives. God used her. And, you know, she doesn't even necessarily have a talent in storytelling. Somebody did that for her, right? She just lived this life. And she, even by her own words, and maybe in a, and maybe because it's in her own words, she presents herself in a much more humble manner than she presents her sister, because we're only hearing it through her, right? We look at Betsy as like, oh my gosh, it's amazing Christian. I don't know for sure, but I think maybe from Corey's memory, that's what it was.
It's her older sister and all that,
Right. I have a theory that the reason why, you know, not that Betsy had to die, sorry to break that to everybody, but I have a theory that Corey was the one that was chosen to talk about it because she's so much more relatable and human. And if Betsy had been the one telling the story, we'd all be like, well, that's unachievable anyway. Like, I'm not that kind of person. Whereas Corey is the person who thinks a little bit more human. Things like, are you crazy? I would have lied. Or like, I can't do this. Like, she's much more, you know, reactive. So like, I think of this as, and as a reminder that, yeah, God needs anybody. On the other hand, I'm also burdened with the knowledge that, you know, to whom much is given, much is required. And we are people who have also you know, had the benefit of one of the world-class education, world-class opportunities, and a top city that's competitive, and, you know, all of that in the world with freedom of expression and government, you know, all the stuff that we have. And so I'm like, well, we do then also have to have a balance of being capable of planning out and being strategic, and you know, and I think there's the balance of being a child of God and then knowing that we can go to him as a child, but that's different from being childish. Like, God does not want us to be childish, but he does want to love, he wants us to love him and to trust him as a child, would.
Yeah, that's a deep revelation.
So it's this balance that I always struggle with, of like, I admire Corey and she's amazing and she's touched so many and I know that you can do anything, but given that I have been given so much more than Corey, then what else?
No, it's a real challenge because apart from the how would I respond, it's also how I have so much, so what am I going to do with it? Like, they did so much with so little in comparison to what I have. So what am I doing? So yeah, that is a deep, well, it's a perplexing, as you said.
it's the struggle that we walk, right? Yeah. Every day. To know what we're capable of, but to not get so arrogant in it that we think we're the ones.
Doing it. Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. I think that's a good takeaway to leave the audience with, that as we wind up this, that really it's almost that expression, like there's something that God said to Moses when he called him, and Moses was like, I can't do this. And then God said to him, pick up that rod. And then he said, what is it? What do you have in your hand? And then he's just like, this is what he used to do the job. So it's almost like, what are we doing with what we have in our hands? I think that's what I'm taking away from what you're saying. And that thing that you said about being a child of God, but not childish, that's another key takeaway for those of us that sometimes just let things slide. Maybe we let them slide too much. There's a difference between trusting God and just being a bit silly. So yeah, that was good. I like that. Thanks, Kin. Anyway, before we round up, because this is a podcast about reading, just wanted to ask you about any reading habits or tips you have for the listeners.
So you know, I think we these days have the benefit of like things like Audible or audiobook, and or summaries, where instead of the book, I watch like master classes from the author that actually summarizes the book. Well, one thing I learned, when you have the audiobook and you're sort of doing, you know, whatever, I put it, if it says like it's an hour long, let's say, I would usually put it at like 1.2 or 1.5 speed. If it's an hour, it'll take about 40 minutes of my time. And I can kind of skip all the like long pauses or introductions and all that, and just kind of get to the point.
I do that for podcasts. I do that for podcasts. So yeah, that's a good tip. Do you have any favorite Christian authors and why?
So let's see. One Christian author that I've been reading a lot of recently is John Mark Comer.
Okay. Yeah.
The first book I read from him was The Garden City. And what I think is really funny about him, and even when you listen to his sermons, is that he's kind of very unassuming. You know, when I first read his book, I was very skeptical of the whole like hipster pastor deal. Like, oh, you know, is he going to be all like, try to be all modern and relevant and all that? And the book sort of starts to... It goes from a very casual conversational style to sort of like flip, and all of a sudden you're like, the depth just like hits.
Deep theology,
and you're like, and you're like, oh, this guy's got some depth. You know? When I listen to his sermons, like, they're really easy to take, but then he just hits you, and it's really, and then you see his like theological depth in there. So I really enjoy everything from him.
I've never listened to his sermons. I've listened to podcasts with him, read a book, but not his sermons. I'll give it a try. Interesting. Cool. And excluding The Hiding Place, do you have any or top three Christian book recommendations?
The first is Crazy Love by Francis Chan. I read that a really long time ago. But yeah, I also really love Francis Chan's style. Of course, Tim Keller. I love, well, he has a lot of really great books, but one of the things that, one of the books that people don't mention a lot of is Freedom of Self-Forgetfulness.
Okay.
And I think that's so relevant for us, especially because we think of a lot of like need for theology and, you know, my need for a lot of things, grace and all that and forgiveness and all the like wonderful fruits of the spirit. But the thing that underlies a lot of that is like ego. And we always forget that. And I think ego can destroy a lot of stuff.
Yeah. No, yeah, that's true.
The freedom of self-forgiveness is a really great reminder of like, you know, how not to think about yourself. And was another one. Well, I mentioned Garden City by John Mark Comer. For those, like, especially professionals who are struggling with trying to understand the intersection between your faith and your professional life that can sometimes feel a bit like a desert.
Yeah.
What's your purpose at work?
Fantastic, fantastic. Great recommendations. And before we round up, is there any other thing you want to say to the audience?
Oh, that's a really good question. I wasn't really thinking about that at all.
You don't have to. There's nothing to say. You don't have to say it.
No, I think the same, I think, through the book, which is I think, yeah, through the whole book, it talks about trust. Mm. And the hiding place is named, I think, after, was it Psalm 119?
I think so.
Where it talks about God is, you know,
the hiding place.
Hiding place. So just to remember, I think a lot of people are going through times of uncertainty. We've got a lot of volatility right now. I'm at a place where I'm thinking about career transition, all that. To just remember, number one, get your ticket at the train station. And two, in the meantime, when things feel like a storm, God is your hiding place.
Amen. Amen. Well, thank you so much, Kin, for this time on the podcast. It's been great. And I shall speak to you soon.
Speak to you soon. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Lovely to have. Thank you for having me.
I don't know if it comes across in the recording, but what I like most about Kin is that she has such a gentle and calming vibe about her. It's no wonder that she encourages us to trust in God in her parting thoughts. If you haven't read it already, please do pick up a copy of The Hiding Place. I think it's a book that uniquely challenges us to do more for the Lord, trust Him more, and forgive His people even more as we remember what He has done for us. As ever, the links to all the books Kin recommended and to The Hiding Place will be in the show notes and on my website, which is www.jeankabasomi.com/podcast. That's www.jeankabasomi.com/podcast. If you like this episode, please rate and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. It really helps the algorithms get the podcast into the hands of other potential listeners. That's all from me. Thanks for listening. God willing, I'll be back in your ears next month. Until then, keep reading and seeking the Lord. God bless. Bye.